Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Philip Jankowski, state reporter for the Dallas News. In today's show, we're talking about the Texas energy grid, including how lawmakers are trying to fix it, what to expect for this coming winter, and how Bitcoin miners fit into the grid. The future of digital asset mining calls for top technical talent. Enhance your ASIC education with Foundry's hands-on courses. Led by veteran industry instructors, Foundry's three-day mining intensive and five-day mining technician academy programs cover a range of topics, from identifying issues and troubleshooting common hardware failures to coursework covering Bitcoin's global impact. Open to enthusiasts and professionals alike, visit www.foundryacademy.com to learn more and sign up for the course that's right for you. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Today, I'm joined by Dallas News reporter, Phil. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Great. So to begin, we should honestly just get like a little rundown on yourself and then what you cover in the state of Texas. Of course, for today's conversation, we're mostly going to be talking about ERCOT and what the plan is for energizing Texas going into the winter months as it's become a fairly contentious issue. I'll boot it over to you just for an introduction on yourself, and then we'll dive into today's conversation.
Yeah, I'm a state government reporter that reports on politics for the Dallas Morning News in Austin, Texas. So I report on basically the goings on of our state lawmakers. Part of my focus, there's a team of us, but part of my focus on that is on energy and the power grid.
Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely been a question as of late. I mean, this all goes back to that February 2021 storm, winter storm Uri, that took out a large portion of Texas infrastructure and then also led to the some deaths. About 200 plus people died, unfortunately, from that winter storm. And that's caused a lot of questions about how Texas manages its energy grid. And it seems that the conversation is ongoing. So I'm just going to kick the question over to you, maybe provide some context on what's happening recently down in Texas, down in Austin, on what needs to be amended to the Texas grid.
Yeah, we're nearly 2 years removed now from that winter storm that really, for your viewers and listeners that don't remember, came close to a near collapse of our power grid and left the, you know, more than half of the state in darkness, in freezing temperatures for 5 days. The big reaction to that has been to, take a very comprehensive look at the Texas power grid, which is known as ERCOT. The acronym is the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, but easy enough to just either call it ERCOT or the Texas Power Grid. What has been going on recently is that we have gotten to a point that the first sort of actions that were taken was to weatherize, winterize power plants and electricity production infrastructure. That has already occurred, and now the longer term look is at how they're going to address the fundamentals of the actual power grid marketplace in Texas.
Awesome. Yeah, it seems like the conversation is only stirring up more. And the first thing I actually thought about this when I've been seeing these reports on Twitter from yourself and other people I follow in the Texas grid is like, why has this not been solved yet? And you mentioned the storm was 2 years ago. There's been some work done on winterization, but it still seems like the key fundamentals of the problem, which is generation and transmission of energy to the correct sources, is ongoing. And just as a layman, someone who's like ignorant about why or how this should be fixed, be curious to get your take on why is it taking 2 years? And is that an acceptable amount of time for something like this to take to solve?
Yeah, I mean, to the folks that were freezing in their homes, of course that is unacceptable. But there are realities that you have to deal with. The speed of business, you can't just even a the way, you know, this is the way things are set up in this country with a capitalist, you know, economy. It's up to businesses to sort of, you know, create these large investments that are going to increase the amount of generation, and address that aspect of it. Transmission is more in Texas, at least, is more government guided there, but that has been less of a focus. It is a very time consuming process, and honestly, it still feels like it's several years away before the market rules change to whatever the next iteration of the Texas power market is. We've been talking about as they've gotten kind of closer to adopting rules, they've been talking about implementation times that could take 3 or 4 years.
Sheesh. Okay, so that raised my eyebrows there, because that years away is not acceptable for someone, like you said, who's, you know, freezing in their house every winter. And it's definitely needed for what Texas is growing year over year in population terms. So it seems to only be a mounting problem. Just to set the chess table for us a little bit here, who's the players that we should know about from like the Texas government, from ERCOT, from like the generation side? Like, who are we mostly talking about when we're talking about people coming to the table and figuring out this problem?
Yeah, I mean, Texas is an oil and gas state, so I feel like that's the first sort of players or sectors that you have to mention there. You know, the power grid is a large portion of the generation comes from natural gas. Texas is a major natural gas producing state. And a ton of businesses and tax revenue comes from oil and gas and natural gas. And Texas has been since the real modernization and the fracking miracle, as they call it. Texas has really been ascendant in that. So they're, you know, that's an extremely powerful lobby. So there are the natural gas producers, you know, second at the table are going to be the industry groups representing the power producers. So your power plant companies, you've got several large companies in Texas that own more generation than others. And then the sort of, you know, starting from where the fuel comes from to where the electricity is produced, and then you get to the final end of it all is the actual power providers. So that's your municipal government-owned utilities, your rural electricity cooperatives, and then the large portion of Texas that is part of the deregulated market that allows people to choose their power provider. So a ton of private companies that are power providers. Those are the big, that's the business side of it. On the government side of it, you've got obviously the leadership in, you know, you've got the governor, you've got the state lawmakers, but then you've also got agencies like the Public Utility Commission, which has really taken the lead in this whole market redesign and weatherization process. That is just a board of appointed folks. And then beyond that, you've got the Texas Railroad Commission, which has nothing to do with railroads. That is actually a body that regulates the oil and gas industry. So that's actually an elected board of folks that regulate the oil and gas industry. And then finally, you've got ERCOT, the agency that runs the Texas power grid. but they you could kind of lump them in with the Public Utility Commission because they kind of report directly to that to them. So it's a lot of it's a lot of folks, as I said,
it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the hierarchy here. Like, how does that work?
Okay, yeah, the hierarchy. I mean, the governor. The governor has the most control over. The governor appointed the people that run the Public Utility Commission. So he has the most sort of it feels like he has the most direct control over it. But though it is debatable, and his office would say that he's not as involved in the day-to-day aspects of it, but that's, as I said, debatable. And then on the lawmaker side of it, the folks crafting the policy, you've got the the leadership of the Texas legislator there. So that's the head of the Texas Senate, the head of the Texas House of Representatives. They're going to have, an outsized voice in this. The Railroad Commission, as I said, those are unlike the Public Utility Commission. Those folks are elected officials, so they are beholden unto only the voters. And so it's an extremely powerful board that regulates or doesn't regulate, as a lot of folks would argue, the oil and gas industry. They have been accused of being a captured agency that is beholden to oil and gas. So that's the higher, that's the political hierarchy there. I would say the most important folks right now are the folks at the Texas legislature, just because of where we find ourselves at this point in time, which I can explain that if you want to, but I'm afraid we're in the weeds here a little bit.
No, I think it's important to go into it in terms of energy market, because most people, when they think about Texas' energy grid, if they know anything about it at all, they might not be curious about it at all. Most people are not curious about energy, but yeah. Here we are talking about it. They think it's like decentralized, or at least it's like it's unregulated, it's open, anyone can plug in. It's a free market. But oftentimes when I see articles about it, I see how politicized it actually is. There's so many players involved. There's a lot of regulators. The governor has a hand in these things. And then even like the generation sources and the power providers, like, there's monopolies within these things naturally, which are often politicized. They might not be politicized in terms of like voters voting for things, but they're politicized in the sense that it's a monopoly with power and they get to decide what they want to do with their corporate power. So give me like a little sense of like how that power distribution works. I think listeners would also appreciate it, because to an outsider, it's a little confusing.
Yeah, it's very dense stuff. It's taken me, two years to really kind of unravel and feel like that I have a good enough understanding of it to even, come on a program like this. But essentially, you were asking about the hierarchy of it more or less. It is a decentralized market. It is at its current state, it is a very unregulated market. There has been some new levers that have been placed in the hands of the grid operator ERCOT that have really kind of given them some power that, when you learned that they didn't have, seem almost kind of silly. I'm talking about the fact that like power generators, power plants didn't have to get any approval from the grid operator to just shut down for maintenance for extended periods of time. So, that was something that is now like in ERCOT's power that they could do that. You know, they didn't used to, there used to be basically like you fill out a form and then you just do it. And now, ERCOT can say during really like the hot summer months that like, no, you can't shut down. Like we need your electricity. It still is and remains very much an unregulated market. And we're entering in, like, this is kind of for the politicians in Texas, you know, it's a state that has been had 20 years of Republican rule in the governor's mansion and both chambers of the Texas legislature, not to mention the courts. And so it's really kind of an interesting tension here to see these folks who are very much their political ethos is against government intervention and regulation to kind of have to walk that back and say, well, we actually do, but this has exposed the fact that there weren't enough controls on the system. So it is still a very decentralized system that was made by design 20 or so years ago when they created the so-called energy only market that really put a premium on competition and the lowest possible prices. And so that still remains. There's been costs added and more power given to the grid operator ERCOT to kind of force generators to stay online. But as far as like new investment and hooking up to the grid, it's still comparatively still a pretty wide open space here.
Thanks for laying that out. With turnover to the argument, which is going on right now down in Austin, that's from my understanding with the Public Utility Commission outlining some new ideas for how this Texas grid is going to change. From my understanding, the winter storm back in February 2021 incentivized the grid to change because it was not working, right? You mentioned that there was people turning off when they should be on. There was transmission failures, winterization failures, half the state plunged into darkness. And now they're trying to come up with a new market model in order to incentivize people to stay online. If you could give us like a little context and background on what sort of models are working for and what the PUC is actually trying to accomplish here.
What the PUC and really what the state leadership politically is trying to accomplish is to, on their face, create a more resilient power grid. The priorities that they have adopted and seem to be pursuing is to incentivize the construction and addition of new power plants that are fueled by natural gas. They kind of use the term dispatchable and natural gas almost interchangeably. Dispatchable is a more broad term that refers to basically any electricity source that can be flicked on at the flip of a switch. So what is left out of that is, so you've got dispatchable, which is, you know, you can turn on and off a natural gas power plant with certain amounts of ramp time. What is left out of that, the big slice of Texas power production that's left out of that is wind and solar, renewable energy, really. Wind and solar being the top two there, because they are broadly referred to as intermittent energy. The wind turbines only turn when the wind is blowing. The solar arrays only are generating electricity when the sun is shining. So the main thrust is to incentivize the construction of natural gas power plants. The thought being that we want to have this stuff on the grid in case if we get to a situation where the power production is plummeting in a weather emergency such as the 2021 winter storm, or really what is more or like a big heat wave like we had this past summer. The And so like, that's the real thrust of it. But there's, you know, I've got a piece that I'm working on that really kind of looks at that, because there's kind of a desire to kind of go after renewable energy. It kind of is getting the blame because it is not always generating, and it's kind of been almost from almost day one, it's been getting the blame for what happened during the winter storm, which it did experience major outages, but so did natural gas facilities and actually more. So it's a very interesting thing to see that the solution to the problem is, you know, in part more of the same problem, you know?
So just to clarify, the PUC is looking at bringing additional natural gas operations onto the grid in order to backstop the grid in case of excess heat or excess cold.
It's very complex, but what their proposal is, but more or less they are forwarding a market design. Their favored market design is one that basically provides incentives. It creates basically a whole new market that really only natural gas would be able to participate in. They call it the performance credit mechanism, which is just the worst name ever. This is just such a jargon-filled subject area. But essentially, it's the whole design is to give credits to natural gas producers that are producing during peak demand, and then allowing them to forcing power companies and municipal utilities who you pay your electric bill to, forcing those entities to buy those performance credits.
Mm. So let's take a step back if I can for a second, then dive into that market structure. When I think of like my local utility, I always expect it to be on. Like, I'm here in Denver, Colorado, and I have no knowledge of how, I think it's Xcel Energy is the provider out here. I don't have a lot of knowledge about what's going on, except for I pay my monthly bill and I expect the lights to be on all the time. And I also have an expectation that the local government's going to enforce that according to law, that they're going to enforce that the lights be turned on if I'm paying for it. In Texas, I'm assuming, you know, contracts are contracts, so that still is going on. But it does seem like there's like this additional incentivization to keep the lights on during peak power, which you wouldn't have in other models. In other models, it seems like the utility is often public and they have to keep the lights on even when it's very expensive for them to generate the energy to do so. But in Texas, you have to have this additional incentive during hours of peak demand where it's very expensive to create energy. Is that more or less correct? Like, just framing it that way?
Not exactly, because like, there is an obligation by the electricity providers here to keep the lights on. The question is there just electricity there for them to be drawing from? And so we've kind of, you know, the incentive in Texas for power companies or for power plants to provide electricity in order to keep the lights on is just the basics, you know, the basic, we have to have the lights on or else, you know, you can't, your dialysis machines weren't working or your Samsung chip plant, you know, can't be producing things like that. So it's more just like, we can't conduct the business of Texas if the lights aren't on.
Okay. That's good to understand. Let's dive into the market structure itself. So I've done some reading, including some of your reporting on what is being considered in Texas right now. This seems to be a very divisive issue, because the market structure is so new. No one's ever done this before. I think even the mention from some of the state legislators was like, this model has never been attempted anywhere in the world. And like you mentioned, it's some sort of credit system where generators get credits, and then power providers have to purchase those credits back, and it somehow ensures this virtuous cycle of people keeping generation online and people being paid. Can you walk us through that again? And then I'm going to ask some follow-up questions about like why this model is even being considered when there are alternative models that seem to be more or less sustainable all across the United States.
You're right. It kind of blindsided some of the legislators. And frankly, it surprised me. The Public Utility Commission is leading this effort, and they hired a firm to basically examine certain different kinds of market constructs that they have been talking about really ever since, ever since, and just like the a month removed from the 2021 storm, developing ideas and then hiring this firm to do like serious research into it. And then finally, after, several months of research, that firm delivered this report and their recommendation. And the Public Utility Commission said, yeah, we hear you, and we're not going with what you recommended. And in fact, we've come up with a completely new mechanism that just kind of popped up while you guys were doing your research. And that's what we're going to go forward with. That being the performance credit mechanism market. The company, the research company actually had had a market design that they had already recommended on behalf of doing work for a large private power company, and they gave that to the Public Utility Commission and said, this is what this company thinks, and we conducted the research on that and this white paper that says this is what we think is the best idea. Then they hired this firm, and lo and behold, that firm recommended almost a carbon copy of what they had given to them more than a year ago. And the Public Utility Commission said that's not what, well, at least that's what the chairman of the Public Utility Commission, a man named Peter Lake, said that's not what we want. That what they had put forward was something that is actually common in the United States, a capacity market that basically pays power plants to be available in case of emergency. That does not jibe well with the they're trying to find some way to still have like this very deregulated market while adding incentives. And so I just didn't, even though that's what I expected to come forth, the capacity market to them just feels like a politically unacceptable market design.
Yeah, just from an outsider's perspective, maybe a comment here more than a question is, seems like they're trying to rework the wheel when there's already ways of doing this. That might be an unfair thought. One thing I do want to bring up is just like the lawmakers that seem to have punted on this. So according to Dallas News reporting, it seems like legislators pushed back on the PUC's comment here to create this new market. And it seems to be, as you guys put it, in disarray at the moment. So where are we in the steps to creating this new Texas energy market, especially, winter's here, it's mid-December.
Yeah. So the PUC comes out with this report, and then it gets trotted out in front of legislators who are coming back to the Capitol in about a month, and basically they as you described, they said that this is untested and were very highly critical of the fact that they were forwarding an idea that they really couldn't find an analog to or something analogous to it, or something, a one-to-one or any sort of proof that this is working elsewhere, because it just seemed like a whole new idea out of left field. So they were very critical, and since then it's kind of come to a bit of a halt. The senators in a very influential committee basically sent a sign by every single member, said, you need to stop what you're doing right now, because what you're showing us doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And frankly, we don't think it does what you said it does. The Public Utility Commission pushed back and basically said, no, this works, and we're gonna keep doing what we're doing. However, then a few weeks later, at another hearing, the head of the Public Utility Commission basically said, we might approve this market design, but what we're approving now is not an actual change to the marketplace. It will just be a recommendation. And now you, lawmakers at the Capitol can do with it what you will, which is a real backtrack, to be honest. They have been saying, the Public Utility Commission members have been asked multiple times, and Chairman Peter Lake has been asked multiple times whether he needed the state legislator to step in and do anything else. And he has said multiple times on the record, no. And now he's saying, yes, here's what we're probably going to recommend, and do whatever you want. So it's all, as I said, I think I was quoting somebody as disarray, and it really is, because it feels like all we've done for this past, coming up, 20 months or so since this whole process began, is basically we're just going to end up forwarding a research paper. We're talking thousands of hours of testimony, tens of thousands of hours of work, millions spent, and then what's going to amount to it is, we're going to let the Texas legislature figure it out, which is, frankly, they're not experts.
Yeah, and then that adds even more time with winter here. Before I ask the next logical question, which is, where are we going from here? I do want to ask a little bit about generation and production of energy sources on the grid. How do Texans, maybe just like your average taxpayer, maybe your legislator, think about generation on the Texas grid? Who do they care about where it's coming from? If it's renewable or not, if it's natural gas or not, do they really just want the lights to be on at this point? And how do they think about the demand side as well? Do they care who's really using this energy? Is there frustration that households might not be able to be warm this winter because there's like large takers on the grid, including Bitcoin mines?
I think more or less your average Texan just wants the lights on. You just want to know that that they can rely on that, because frankly, we've seen what happens when we can't rely on that. And there's been echoes of that since then, that they've been in the summer months just this past year, where we haven't had blackouts or brownouts, but we've had alerts sent from the ERCOT, the power grid folks, saying, can you please, we need you to turn, it's way too hot. We need you to turn up your thermostat. We need you to turn off your TV. We need you to conserve electricity, because we're hitting a point where we might, if something doesn't happen, we might have to cut power to somebody. That happened, three times. I might be wrong on that, but I know for sure three times this year. And some was in the summer, some was in like the late spring, even when the temperatures were kind of nice, so there's still anxiety there. There's a bit of, PTSD there, to be honest, for a lot of folks. I was one of them, shivering in my house. So that's obviously what they care about most. I mean, there are people, your more politically minded people definitely do care about where it comes from. Your youthful progressives. I'm in liberal Austin, so there's a lot of folks that are very, where we do have the local government makes pledges to buy power from renewable sources and stuff like that. But those folks are easily outnumbered by folks that work in the industry. It's a huge industry. It's a huge driver of tax revenue as well. Oil and gas, I mean. So there's a lot of conflict there, and it is just like almost everything else, you know, kind of a left and right sort of situation.
Gotcha. What about demand from the grid? The follow-up here, of course, is like we've seen Bitcoin miners move into that region. I think it's 1.7 gigawatts of sustainable load, or forget the industry term right now, but basically loads that can be turned off and diverted back to the grid. And I'm sure there's upwards of 2 gigawatts of Bitcoin mining on the grid at this point. And then there's other heavy infrastructure as well. Is there a sense from people you're reporting with or on about who's taking this load? And are people frustrated with them, the fact that they're in line getting this load? Or what's the average sense from people you're speaking with?
Yeah, I don't know if frustration is quite there. I mean, again, your average Texan just isn't really paying that much attention to that stuff. But they're less enthusiastic about it than they are about, you know, a big, you know, like a huge employer coming to town, you know, like, you know, I'm sure we've got the Tesla, you know, plant here in Austin. That's a new thing that just came, you know, opened up this year. And, you know, that brings with it a ton of jobs. So you've got a lot more, you know, you've got the governor out there trumpeting that kind of stuff. You've got press releases coming from, you know, Democrats and Republicans saying, look what we did to bring jobs, high paying jobs, you know. But when it's a bank of computers out in like West Texas, you know, that, so there isn't like, I don't think that there are people necessarily opposed to it. You just don't see people cheering it on like you do when you see these massive power, you know, these industrial, I wouldn't really call Bitcoin an industrial user. It's just a user.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty small when you look at the
job generation involved, but yeah, just not on the same order of magnitude as opening a factory, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see that from the ERCOT reports, right? So it's about 1.7 gigawatts. And I think the total Texas grid, they had about 850 gigawatts of total generation with a margin there from the latest report I saw.
There is some enthusiasm. There's enthusiasm among some of the folks that are like, you know, folks that are paying attention like you, but also like folks that are like really kind of thinking about the a lot of the concepts of power demand and how having somebody like or having a large amount of mining, Bitcoin mining, cryptocurrency mining operations in Texas, because the positive aspect to that is the fact that, like, okay, well, you're going to be you're creating more demand. More demand incentivizes more, you know, and more demand creates higher prices. Higher prices creates an incentive for new power plants and adding total generation. So they look at that's a good thing, especially the fact that there are a lot of these cryptocurrency mining operations are entering into contracts with their service provider that says, you know, when the prices are at a certain point, we will shut down. That creates the sort of industry concept there that they've created is something called a virtual power plant. Which is that, like, when there's an incredible amount of demand, suddenly you were saying that there might be 2 gigawatts of demand coming from cryptocurrency miners. Well, the virtual power plant being that we can add 2 gigawatts of power generation for hospitals, dialysis clinics, homes, schools by turning off cryptocurrency, and that power generation wouldn't be there if not for this kind of this kind of demand that can be turned on and off. It's kind of interesting that like you've got the, you know, I haven't seen as much of, I'm, it's only popping in my head right now, the sort of the synergy between the uh, the dispatchable demand, or like the dispatchable production, and what we've got is like dispatchable demand as well. I don't know that anybody's gone down that rabbit hole yet. We might be breaking new ground here. I don't know. You tell me. I feel like I'm going off the reservation here.
The flexible load stuff is something that you'll hear at any sort of Bitcoin meeting in Texas, always talking about, hey, we can power off in an instant and divert this energy somewhere else. The difference here that a lot of people don't like to make, though, or the point, I should say, is that you have to be incentivized by money to do that. So they're not turning off their Bitcoin mines unless they're ethically feel the need to, or are incentivized to do it with money. From my understanding, there's no government pull to step in there. And that's very Texan, from my understanding, right? It's like almost very libertarian. You do what you want with your energy. But I do think that that separation there, the fact that you mostly are only turning off for money, could lead to some negative PR for Bitcoin miners in the near future. And I was curious if you get that from anyone that you're speaking to.
No, not really, to be honest. I mean, that's just that to... Yeah, that's my opinion. That's just good business, you know. The folks that I see making a ruckus about that are folks that would probably just prefer they not be turned on in the first place. People that are just thinking about power conservation. People that might be, you know, thinking about power conservation, and people that might just be sort of opposed to the whole cryptocurrency philosophy. You know, of course, know about all the rhetoric surrounding it, especially recently.
No, that's great to hear then. I'm happy to hear that. Let's finish up with the last logical question, which we skipped away from a little bit ago. And that's, where does this go from here? It's mid-December. We still don't have a lot of closure on what this new energy market's going to look like. It's now being mooted over to lawmakers, which seemingly, you know, could take years. It's a bureaucracy. So how does this get done? What's your sense for where ERCOT goes from here?
My sense of where we go from here is, well, first of all, we're headed into the winter, which is now a stressful time for people. You know, thankfully, the storm that happened that caused, you know, so many people to die and the massive blackouts was very, you know, I've never seen anything like that. And I've lived in Texas, you know, for more than 30 years. They did say they weatherized their equipment. You know, the question is what happens when we're tested? We don't know yet. And as you said, really the next step in the overall what happens to the market is it gets kicked to the legislature. But I can tell you that unless if the legislature does nothing, the price of energy in Texas is going to go up. I couldn't tell you how that really, because I'm not an expert in other power grids and other ISOs across the, you know, the country. But whatever we do to, you know, incentivize natural gas or do whatever to make the grid more resilient costs money, and the money and those costs will always be passed down to the consumers, whether it's me in Austin, Texas, or your mining operation out in, you know, out in West Texas somewhere. Obviously the goal of everybody is to try to create a more resilient grid while minimizing costs as much as possible, but it's really hard to peg where those where it's going to end up. Already before inflation kind of took off, people were already seeing major increases to their bills. I'm sure the folks that you've talked to have seen that as well, that this isn't as attractive as a state as it might have been when the big boom of first started happening after the China thing. I wouldn't expect those prices to go down. I'm wrong just as often as I'm right, but all every single one of these market designs that were examined in the report, every single one had added costs to it. The only thing that had no added cost to it was leave things as they are. And already, like just this past year with the new things that ERCOT has done, the already costs have gone up. So yeah, that's the long short of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfair to look into the crystal ball, but it is helpful for people's expectations, maybe even just a little bit. Phil, I want to thank you so much for your time today on the Mining Pod. Thanks for your expertise and give us insight into what's happening down in Austin.
Yeah, I had fun. Thanks so much.